The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
What we're working on is the Torah's spiritual technology towards success, and towards success at anything. In fact, yesterday we pointed out that even for bad, possibly. And the basic principle is that all the powers within us are not from us. And the more we're able to nurture and solidify our connection to the one who these powers are from, the more these powers are able to flow into our lives. And that really what we're talking about is all from our perspective. From Hashem's perspective, Hashem is completely one with each and every one of us. And Hashem is 100% your God. And you, from Hashem's point of view, are the single most important person in the whole universe. And so am I, and so is he, and so is she. And that's the mystery of love. You can love all your children 100%. And every one of your children is your number one favorite kid. Okay? And that's from Hashem's perspective. The problem is our perspective. To the extent that we recognize this truth and act accordingly to that recognition, to that extent, that truth can come into our lives. Okay? And that really, in a nutshell, Judaism is a technology of belief. This is how one would act. This is how one would speak. This is what one would think if one truly believed that Hashem is with them and that all the powers in their lives are coming from Hashem. This is it. So really, your belief in what is determining whether what is can get into your life. So for instance, what distinguishes a normal person from a mentally not so normal person? It's really what they believe. Fellow walks in and he says to the doctor, you know, someone's trying to kill me. Okay? And the doctor asks some questions and the doctor does a little research and basically, you know, finds out that, well, nobody's trying to kill him. Right? But he believes somebody is trying to kill him. So everywhere he goes, everybody seems like they are really plotting his death. I mean, just try this. Just try being a little mentally unhealthy a little bit. I've done this, right? Sit in an airport and think to yourself that really, this is not just an airport, but all these people here are secret agents. Put that in your mind. And just think about, suddenly you start seeing it. Suddenly you start seeing how this guy moved over to that guy and handed this guy something. And then you start realizing, this is a plot! Right? And you really go nuts. Okay, and then you get on the plane. But it's amazing the power of your mind. But a mentally healthy person, what they believe about who they are, what they believe about who others are, and what they believe about who Hashem is, if there is Hashem, and whether he is, in fact, in their life, that is depending on, is their belief coordinated with what's real? Okay? What's real? So if what you believe is not coordinated with what's real, then you're going to block out what's real coming into your life. Huh? Right now in this room, there's Japanese music playing, right? But none of us hear this Japanese music. This music is also playing in my office at home. This music is also playing in Yeshiva Kotel over there. Even Eishet Torah is listening to this music. Everybody's got this music. Now, how come we don't hear it? Because we didn't turn our radios on. But if we all turned on our radios and attuned our radios to Radio Japan, suddenly we experience and have that music in our lives. So Hashem is present in our lives no matter what. Hashem is here and now and always and loves us, and we're connected to Hashem all the time. The problem is we don't believe that. And if we did believe that and demonstrated that belief through the way we speak and the way we think and the way we act, then that truth would come pouring into our lives. Right? So a mentally healthy person is that their beliefs coordinate to what really is. And as your beliefs veer away from that truth, so you start getting more static. You know, first you're hearing, you know, Radio Japan real clear, and then start hearing a little, and then you might even get, who knows, Radio Jordan, because you're just not tuned in to what's really going on. So this fellow walks into a psychiatrist's office, and the receptionist says, "Can I help you?" He says, "I would like to meet with the doctor." She says, "Well, do you have an appointment?" He says, "Well, I'm sorry, I don't have an appointment, but I really do need to see the doctor. Is there any way you could make some time for me?" She says, "Well, I'll check into that, but could you tell me what is the problem?" He says, "Well, the problem is I think I'm God." He says, "Oh, okay, fine, thank you. I will see if the doctor has some time for you." So she goes in and she says, you know, she talks to the doctor, and she comes out and she says, "The doctor is happy to see you right now." He says, "Oh, I'm sorry, that's not possible." She says, "Well, why not?" He says, "Well, I'm God. You can't see God, okay?" So like it's, right? So that's what he believes, right? That's what he believes. And he's wrong, because I'm God. So that's his problem. But your beliefs is the most important. It's the key to everything in our lives. Okay? So what we're learning over here is, what is it that I need to believe in order to receive what it is that Hashem wants to be giving me and is giving me all along? Right? To receive what is actually being given already. So the Kabbalah tells us about 10 divine powers. Now again, from Hashem's perspective, there's no 10. But from our perspective, when we describe Hashem as so manifest in our lives, there are 10 fundamental powers through which Hashem is made known to us in our lives and expressed to us. And it's these powers which are the connecting point. You can call them gates. I like calling it a gate because a gate is empty, right? So there's nothing to a gate, but it's there that the connection is happening, okay? So right now we're working on really the first point of connection, so to speak, in our relation to Hashem. Again, from Hashem's perspective, this is a done deal, but from our perspective, unfortunately, it's not. And that is Keter, right? The power of Keter. How Hashem is made manifest into our lives as the ultimate self, the source of all consciousness, the source of all will. Right? And we expressed how Keter in Kabbalah is referred to as Ayin. Ayin means nothing. Not nothing, but nothing, because we can't categorize Keter. We can't describe Keter, because describing Keter would be describing the power of describing, which is indescribable. Right? In other words, to try and describe Keter is like describing what seeing looks like. Seeing doesn't look like anything, but seeing is seeing. Okay? And you just have to experience it to know. What does hearing sound like? What does taste taste like? What does smell smell like? Right? Basically, you're trying to describe the very powers that enable you to describe in the first place, and those powers are indescribable. They don't fit into any categories. And that is the self. The Talmud says, just as the soul sees and is unseen. Why is the soul unseen? Because it's the seeing. It's the source of seeing. You can't see the source of seeing. So too, Hashem sees and is unseen. Okay? And essentially, as we've learned, is how do we strip away and get to that core essential you, that self, which itself is a ray of the divine self. Right? You're not God, but you are a part of God, or I think in English, a ray of divine light. And if you were a ray of sun, and suddenly you have been gifted self-consciousness, right, you'd say, well, who am I? I feel that I'm here to bring radiance into the world. I feel I'm here to bring warmth and vitality into the world. But then again, this radiance and this warmth and this vitality I feel, is this really mine? Do I really think this is coming from me? Clearly not! Right? So then where is this coming from? Right? Am I self-contained? Self-propelled? Who is my root? That would be a process of self-awareness of a ray of light. Okay? And that's what we need to do. Okay? And when, so to the extent that we acknowledge that our very power to acknowledge is coming from Hashem, right? And that is the greatest mystery at all, that I'm aware of any mystery at all, right? And where is that coming from? So that deep, deep sense is a sense of how Hashem is made manifest in the world through you, right? And that is the highest experience of serving Hashem. To serve Hashem means I want to be the ray. I want to be that vehicle for the truth of Hashem to become expressed into the world. Okay? And the more you believe that to be true, and the more you live a life that's according to that belief, the more that truth can be experienced and is effectualized in your life. So we're talking about Keter. And now if you can turn to page 6 in our source sheets over here, I want to talk about where the ultimate root of all sin lies. Where do all the mistakes happen in our lives? And it happens in the sin of Adam and Eve. Right? What happens in the sin of Adam and Eve? So, this is really paraphrasing, this isn't quite a source, but Rabbi Nassan, and I didn't have the time to find the source, but I've seen this before, that Rabbi Nassan was the prime student of Rav Nachman of Breslov. And all the writings of Rav Nachman of Breslov were written by his student, right, Rav Nassan. This is not uncommon, by the way. The Arizal, Rav Isaac Luria, the greatest Kabbalist, all his writings were written by Rav Chaim Vital. Right? Because very often these great teachers, right, they speak so fast, they can't write as fast as they speak or think. So they have their students, their students, many times it's their students that actually bring the teachings to us. So Rav Nassan wrote many of the works, if not maybe even all of the works of Rav Nachman of Breslov. And in one place he points out that the problem of Adam and Eve is they tried to go beyond the limits of their keter. Right? Their keter. Because that's really the problem in life. Are you trying to take the crown of God? That's the question. Now Hashem's willing to share His crown with you. And the crown is the symbol, keter is the symbol, right, of mastery. Absolute freedom. Because what the king wants, who's going to tell him what to do? Right? If the king wants it, he wants it. You're going to tell him what to do? Right? He makes the rules. He breaks the rules. He can do whatever he wants. So now we have the situation of Adam and Eve, and they're in the garden. Right? And they're frolicking away and everything's wonderful. Realize that they only had two mitzvahs. And these two mitzvahs, these two commandments, really epitomize the totality of all of Judaism. They only had two mitzvahs. A do and a don't. Okay? What was the do? Thou shalt eat from all the fruits of the garden. What a mitzvah. That doesn't seem so hard. That's a mitzvah to eat and enjoy the fruits of this garden. That was their mitzvah asay. Right? And it was to eat. Right? Rav Nachman says that the sin of Adam and Eve was a sin connecting to eating, and the tikkun of the world, the fixing of the world, will come through eating. Right? And it's so much of our life, and so much of our personal challenges in life is all about food and our relationship to food. Right? It's an incredible thing. Okay, it's an incredible thing. So they were the first with a little bit of a disorder, a eating disorder, right? Because they weren't willing to go according to God's order, right? God ordered them to eat from all the trees, but there was just one. Just one. Just one that they can't eat. And of course, that's the one you want, right? That's just the way it is, you know? That's the way it is. You can give your kids everything, but they want just the one they can't have, right? But that's all coming from that place of exploring borders and boundaries, right? Exploring, like, I feel this incredible freedom, but how far does my freedom go, right? Why is it so important that there's just one that they can't eat from? Why is that so important? I want you to know, according to some, there's many opinions, what really was this tree of knowledge? Some say it was wheat, right? Some say it was grapes. Some say it was actually all the seven species, right? Nobody says it was an apple. Isn't that amazing? Nobody says an apple. I'm sure that whole apple thing was from apple producers. I'm sure it was apple producers that figured this is the way to sell apples, right? Because that's why I started smoking banana peels. Did you do that? Right? Right? When we were kids, we were told that smoking banana peels gets you high, right? So kids were drying out banana peels and smoking banana peels, right? It got you high because it got you constipated, right? You know? Essentially, it was like, so I don't know who came up with this apple thing, but I have not seen a source that says it's an apple, but whatever. The idea is this. Some commentaries say there's nothing to this tree. There is no power to this tree. There's nothing at all special about this tree. Well, why couldn't they eat from the tree? Hashem wanted just one tree that they couldn't eat from. It didn't really matter what it was. It's just the one that tells you you're not God. That's it. That's all. You're not God. You just needed one. So just remind you, everything is total freedom. You can just go with the flow and feel the presence of God within you, around you. You can experience that mysterious truth that yourself is no less than a ray of divine. But there's got to be one that reminds you, a ray of divine. Call me Ray, right? But Ray, where does that fine line get transcended where a person starts to think they are God and they can just do whatever they want? So this is just to be one. That's all Hashem wanted from them. And that would have been the key to love. Because at the point where I forget that I'm not you, I can't love you. Because there's no me to love you anymore. Right? That's the whole point. If for us to be we, there's got to be a me. Love must respect that I'm not you and you're not me. There's got to be a significant otherness. Otherwise, there is nebulous. There's nothingness. And so, in Jewish tradition, as close as we come to the recognition of Hashem's all-embracing, all-permeating oneness, and that there's nothing but God, we still realize that it's I that realize that there's nothing but God. There's still a sense of distinction that will never be trespassed. Because then, love has no chance. And this is what it says in the Talmud. Love breaks and destroys boundaries. That's the fear and the danger of love. Love destroys boundaries, whereby people are so in love, I'm you, you're me, there's no we, there's just this ecstasy, right? What I love, you love, what you love, I love, right? And then there's this incredible experience, and there you are, and you're in this park, and suddenly your eyes connect, and there's music in the background. Da 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 da, da 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 da, and then slowly again you're racing to each other, you know, strangers in the night, exchanging glances, lovers at first sight, and everything is utopia. And we're just so one. You love what I love, and I love what you love, and we just love everything. And then things break down, and then we realize you. you say tomato, and I say tomato. Let's call the whole thing off. You say potato, and I say potato. Let's call the whole thing off. Suddenly you realize, as one as you are, you're not the same. And then you realize the real power of love. The real power of love is that we're one and not the same. Now that's a miracle. Now that's ecstasy. So there had to be just one mitzvah. Because Adam and Eve are like babies in this embryonic fluid of the Garden of Eden. And you know, I'm told by the babies that I've interviewed that that there's no sense of distinction between themselves and the rest of the world. That when the baby cries, they think the whole world is crying. When they lift up their hands, they think the whole world has lifted up their hand. I mean, they don't even know it's their hand sometimes. They see it now. Whose hand is it? I mean, there's no sense of boundaries, borders. That's the evolution of mankind. It's all about boundaries and borders. That's what it's about. It's about, I'm not you, you're not me. And that is the absolute, absolute critical development so that we can get to the we. But without that, there's no possible. Not possible. There can't be a we without a me and without a you. And so you have to stand there like babies, and they're just enmeshed in this, you know, and if you don't know the difference, you don't know the difference, right? So Hashem's presence is in the garden. But you know what? They don't know Hashem's presence is in the garden because they don't know anything else. Right? If you were rich, and you were always rich, and your friends were rich, and you only watched Dallas all day long, right? And it was all about rich people, and you only read magazines about stories of rich people and successful people. Would you be rich? Would you know you're rich? You can't know you're rich. You've never experienced anything other than rich. So how would you be conscious of rich? Right? Do you get the point? It's a serious problem. Serious problem. I remember Kirk Douglas told me that the greatest gift his parents gave him, he could not give his children. My parents gave me the gift of poverty. Right? By the way, I'd be happy to give anybody that gift if they'd like to donate all their money to Israelites. I'd be happy to help you out on that. Right? But that was the gift. He said, I couldn't give my children poverty. I tried to help him. I tried to. But I don't know. It didn't work out. But that's what he said. He said, he remembers he went out on a date with this woman, and they went to a restaurant, and they ordered these steaks. She took one bite of the steak, and she lit up a cigarette, and she put out her cigarette in the steak. He said, let me take you home to your place. Goodbye. He said, it was like a story that so devastated him that someone would do that. He says, in my home, we had one egg for the entire family. I think there were 9 siblings, right? And Nebuch, he was the only boy. So you now understand why he's so macho. Well, when you think about it, it's like poverty. If you don't know, if you have no conscience, if you've never experienced down, how could you know you're up? Right? If you've never tasted sour, how would you know it's sweet? So really, Hashem created the world where this is opposite that. He created the world of contrasts. And that's where beauty happens. It's in the contrast where beauty is happening. And that's where truth is. In the Kabbalah, Tiferet is beauty, and Tiferet is truth. The manifestation of truth comes through the contrasts. Okay? And so here they are, imagine, they're in the Garden of Eden, which you can't imagine because you've tasted from the tree of knowledge. They didn't. So basically everything is free-flowing, everything is so wonderful, and then there's this thing they're not supposed to touch. And you know what? They weren't so interested in touching it. Right? They were just like so blitzed out. Okay? But that's not good enough. Because Hashem wants them to achieve consciousness. Keter is consciousness, it's self-consciousness as part of the source of all consciousness. So therefore, the story goes that Hashem puts a tree in the middle of the garden. Couldn't he put it behind the mulberry bush? What's it got to be in the middle of the garden for? And then Hashem creates a snake that is the most sly of all creatures. Hashem gave him that incredible seductive, manipulative, you know, you go into some of these stores, you meet these snakes. You know, this guy, he's a salesman. So the snake is like, I can sell anyone to anything to anyone at any time. That was the snake. He was really good at this. So he comes slivering up, but he didn't sliver up because he had feet, but wouldn't seem the same, you know. But he walked up to them, and he says to Eve, he says, sweetie. He didn't say sweetie, but he meant that, right? He says, you know, why don't you eat from that tree over there? I didn't even notice it. I mean, she's sitting there eating mangoes and kiwis. Who's interested in wheat? I mean, whatever it was, you know. And he says, you know why Hashem doesn't want you to eat from that tree? Because he knows that when you eat from the tree, you will be like him. Knowers of good and evil. Right? You have to understand, this speaks to her. Why does she even find this an attractive point? Because that's all we want, is to be like him. Because we are an expression of him. We can't not want to be like him. How can the ray of light not want to express light? So it's the most absolute only point that the Yetzer Hara could ever really get away with. Right? He didn't say, listen, if you eat of it, you'll be famous. Who's interested in fame? He didn't say, if you eat of it, you'll be rich. Who's interested in wealth? He didn't say, if you're interested, if you eat of it, you'll have a fabulous sex life. Who's interested in sex? Right? All of those are inappropriate, hopeful ways to get what we really want. We want to be godly. We just want to be who we are. Souls, an actual part of God. But we're not sure if we're a part of God, or maybe we're God. Maybe we can be a God. Right? So the snake says, if you eat of this tree, you will be as gods. Knowers of good and evil. And she looks at the tree, and it says that she saw it was good, and she saw that it was a taiva. It was a desire for the eyes. She wanted the power to desire. What is the power to desire? The power to desire is the ability to just let loose. And not have to explain why I want what I want. I just want it. I gotta have you, I want you, and that's it. Right? And I don't need any reason or rhyme. I don't have to offer any logic for what I want. It's called the life of lust. Right? And there's something really fabulous about that. Right? If I could explain it, I remember I saw the front of one of these magazines, the scientific explanation of love. I went, ugh. Like, who would want that? You know, who would want that? Its power is its mystery. Its power is, I don't know why I love you. Right? Why do you love chocolate cake? I don't know why I love chocolate cake. I just do. Right? Nobody can explain it. You know, they've said that why is Coca-Cola so popular? Because nobody can identify its taste. It doesn't taste like anything. Right? Snapple's doing real, but this is kiwi. I mean, it tastes like kiwi. It tastes like mango, orange, carrot. But there's some kind of frame of reference I have for it. But they found that Coke, there's no frame of reference. I don't understand why, because Pepsi. But that's the point. It's like indescribable, and I can't describe why, and I don't feel I need to. It's my total freedom. My license to just love. I love it for the love of it. For the fun of it. For the lust of it. So she saw that it was a desire for the eyes, meaning that it would give her the power to desire. But more than that, they'd be like God. What's the difference between us and God? We know good, we know evil. He knows good, he knows evil. It's not all the same. Because when you know good, it means you are describing something as good, or you're describing something as bad. But God doesn't simply describe what's good and what's bad. God determines what's good and what's bad. So what God knows to be good becomes good. And what God knows to be bad becomes bad. Do you understand that? Whereby what we know to be good is depending on whether it is good or not. We could delude ourselves, but it is good or it's bad. And we might just not be attuned with what it is, but we have no choice to determine it. So do you understand what the snake was saying? He was saying that you will have the crown of the king. This is your keter. God wears a crown, so to speak, and he can do what he wants. He can decide for himself what's good, what's bad. What he knows to be good is good, and what he knows to be bad is bad. That is the ultimate freedom. It's the epitome of freedom, right? A freedom that does not in any way have to bound to or bow to wisdom or logic, right? I don't have to make sense. I just want it this way. Can you imagine the power of that? You should be able to, because it's most of society. Most of society is just trying to wear this crown. That we'll decide what's good. We'll decide what's evil. This is just a social contract. You guys are all used to thinking this is bad. Well, who says it's bad? Maybe it's good. Right? If we all decide it's good, it's good. But it's not. We could all decide it's good and it's still bad. And we're wrong. But that's the tree of knowledge of good and bad. They want it to be knowers like God. Not like human beings that are only examining what is, but not determining what is. They want it to be like God, knowers of good and evil. And in so doing, they were trying to go beyond the limitations of Keter. It's true Hashem shares his crown with you, but he shares his crown with you. He doesn't give it to you, right? Doesn't give it to you. And there's an incredible midrash that the moon had a complaint about the sun. And said, you can't have two kings wearing two crowns, right? So, something's problematic here. So Hashem says, you say that? Okay. Well, so then you make yourself small. Right? And that's why today the moon is smaller, its light is dependent on the sun. Strange midrash. You know, what's really strange about this midrash, and I heard this beautiful understanding of this from Rav Mutti alone, is that the moon is right. What does the moon say that's wrong? The moon says you can't have two kings sharing one crown. Right? You can't have two kings sharing one crown. So what was its mistake? The mistake is it thought it was the king, when it's only the servant of the king. And therefore, well, if you don't understand that, you make yourself small. But the son understood that it's not the king, it's just the servant of the king, and therefore it could have the crown. As long as you don't think you're the king, and you know you're the agent for the king, as long as you don't delude yourself with all this incredible light and radiance and vitality experience within yourself to start thinking you are the son, rather realizing you're the ray of sun, we're okay. That's why they had that tree. And this was an opportunity for love. This was an opportunity to fully experience Keter, crown, as far as one could as a human being, a human other. And so, the snake was doing a holy job. The snake's job in the garden and in our life, because he's still working overtime, right, is consciousness building, right? The snake's job is to present you with an alternative so you can understand what you have before you. And so this, they never thought of this. Here is their dilemma, right? We sense this incredible freedom within us. Where does that freedom come from? What are the limits of our freedom? Maybe there are no limits to this freedom. What? On the other hand, God told us not to eat of this tree. And that's exactly my sore spot, because that's exactly where you stepped on my godliness, when you said no to me. And it was that point, had they restrained themselves, it wouldn't have been good enough that they just never noticed the tree and never ate from the tree. That would not actualize the extent of their keter. They had to see that tree, want that tree, desire that tree. And just as they're reaching for the tree, am I crazy? What a nut. Do I think the very power that I'm using to even reach for the tree is mine? Do I think that I created this world? Do I think that I created within myself the ability to even make this decision whether it's good or bad? What am I talking about? Hashem doesn't want me from the tree, I want me from the tree. And in that moment they would have experienced self-transcendence. At that experience they would have exercised the epitome of free choice. The epitome of free choice is to control free choice. Right? That's the epitome of free choice. Are you freely able to not be free? Ah, that's it. Where in the world where people say, I want to do what I want to do, when I do it? Now, freedom, freedom, freedom. What has happened in a world of freedom? What? Teenagers are killing themselves. People are in depression. Right? Is freedom always a gift? Yes, if you tap into real freedom, the freedom to limit your freedom. Because if you can't limit your freedom, freely limit your freedom, you're not free. You get that? Okay? People aren't nodding their heads. You either nod your head or not, right? That's the most incredible experience. And I want you to know that that's where you find your self-worth. It's called discipline. That's where you find your self-worth. It's when you discipline yourself and you do not give unbridled license to your wild will, but you willfully control your will. It's an amazing experience. Yes?
But it doesn't, I know exactly what you're saying, but it doesn't feel free.
It doesn't feel free at first. Right? At first it certainly doesn't feel free, but after you do it, you realize you've tapped into a higher place within you because you're now doing God's will. Remember the example I gave you. Let's go back to this child who was having, who was being toilet trained. So the child is being toilet trained, the parents say, listen, you know, here's a potty and you're going to do it in there. From the child's perspective, what? Me? Crazy? I'm a happy-go-lucky, let it go, just, I'm free. Right? That's the beauty of watching children, they're just free. Okay, well then what happens? Well, so the parents create this reward and punishment situation, which creates a dilemma. Well, I do want my freedom, but then again, I do want that chocolate. So, okay, you know, so they go for the chocolate and they control themselves, right? And they discipline themselves. But what happens is they start to realize that what was experienced as a restraint of their freedom now exposed and released an even higher self, a deeper freedom to be an adult. And had I knew what my parents knew about life and hygiene, right? But imagine a parent who loves their child so much they don't toilet train them. Who would make it in this world? Oh, that just sounds terrible. Who would make it in this world? Okay, but all right, forget about that. Delete. But really, when you think about it, now when you think about it, it's like this person would be a total social retard, right? How could they be in business meetings? What would they? Right? Well, what would they do? Right? They can't do anything. You know? And they'd have no friends. For sure. So understand that freedom, had they chosen and made God's will their will, even though they want to eat from the tree, because they want to be like God and expose their godliness, had they chosen not to eat from the tree, that suddenly that would have exposed their godliness. In other words, the snake wasn't lying completely. Right? Because basically the motivation of mankind is to experience and to release the godliness that truly is their inner core. The question is, how do you do it? Do you do it by unbridled freedom? Or you do it through the incredible level of freedom, free to restrain myself. Because if you're not free to restrain yourself, then you are a slave to freedom. Huh? You're really a slave to freedom. You can't restrain yourself. I want you to know, this is why Judaism is not popular, right? It's not popular. It's very hard, because in a world of no restraints, where restraint is not so respected by a lot of people, it's like, do what you can. Don't regret it. Right? And yet Judaism is about restraint. It is the secret of self-restraint, which actually becomes an expression of an even higher form of freedom, right? And a deeper place of self. And now you're really in the driver's seat rather than on the trunk or on the hood, because you're in the driver's seat and you can push the brakes, not just the gas, right? And that's the freedom. That's the freedom. The highest freedom is to restrain your freedom. And it taps into your highest form of godliness. Right? And what you're doing is what God did. It's called tzimtzum. God fills the entire universe, so to speak. God is the universe, but for you and I to exist, He restrained His presence. He pulled back, so to speak, and made a place for you and me. And when you do that, and you pull back, you make a space for God in your will. It's amazing stuff. It's amazing stuff. So one second. So this is the mistake. But there had to be a challenge. There had to be a drama for consciousness. And the snake was there to do them a favor. And had they not eaten from the tree, they would experience the depth of Keter. They would know that as an agent for God in this world, they share His crown. But they stepped over that little boundary, right? From love to infatuation, whereby there's a loss of self in the search for self and a connection to the ultimate self. And you're not allowed to ever do that. Ever. So there was just one mitzvah. That's all, just one mitzvah. And now we're stuck with so many. I'm just joking. Right? But think of it. That's really what it's about. All the do's and all the don'ts. Right? Why do we have so many? Because we need even more opportunities for self-restraint. Even more opportunities for self-expression. In order to reclaim our crowns, our true crowning selves, as expressions of Hashem, our will, as a stream of His, a beam of His light into this world. So now you had a question.
Yes, when we're coming back to the tree, is there a distinction ultimately between good and evil?
We're going to talk about that. The question is, what is the role of evil in the world? We're going to talk about that. Okay, so again, questions have answers and some questions have classes. So that's a class. Yes, Jerry.
Regarding the consequences, man has a labor, woman has a meaning first. What are the meaning of those consequences?
Oh, great question. So what about the consequences? What happens? Why is man now going to labor? Right? Because the secret to everything, the secret to accessing Keter is humility. Humility. It's to know that you don't know everything. It's to know that you don't have the entire crown. It's not your crown. So man, you know, the students of the Rebbe, Rabbi Simcha Bunim Apshisk, they asked him, you know, Rebbe, this whole story isn't fair. Because, you know, Adam, he's cursed with the toil of the earth. Woman is cursed with the pains of labor. But the snake, what was his curse? Dust and dirt will be your sustenance? What kind of curse is that? He's a rich man. He's everything he needs wherever he is. That's not a curse. So the Rebbe says, no, you don't understand. You see, when man is trying to make a living, and he's working, sweating real hard to make it, he's going to turn his eyes to God. He's going to say, God, I need your help. Right? I need you in my life, because I can't do this alone. And a woman, when she's there lying in bed, about to give birth, right? And they say, boil the water. I don't know why they boil the water, but I think it's because they have tea afterwards. Right? Boil the water. Right? And I remember this so distinctly. This was so powerful. When my son, Suriel. When Suriel was about to be born. So Han and I went to the hospital. And who greeted us was the woman who now lives next door to us. She did not live next door to us then. Right? But now she's our next door neighbor. And she was very, very close to my parents. She once lived at my parents' home. She's my sister. No, I'm just joking. She once lived at my parents' home, so we know her. And we come to this hospital, and who welcomes us at this hospital, and this is her job, is this woman. Right? And we're a little freaked, you know, even though you go through birth a couple of times, it still never gets less freaked. It's always freak. I mean, for us anyways. So we get there, and I remember this woman turning to us, and she said, now it's time for surrender. And that just went right into my heart. Now you gotta let go and let God. And that's why I decided to call him Suriel, to remind me of surrender, right? Because Suriel means God is my rock. God is my rock. And without my rock, I got nothing to stand on. Nothing to stand on. And that's why we gave my son, our son, the name Suriel. So a woman about to give birth, why does she know God at that point? Does she realize that there's a place where she is not in control? And you start to pray. I'm sure even the greatest atheists, when they're about to give birth, are praying with all their might. May it be a healthy child. May it be an easy birth. May it be a rich multimillionaire. No, just joking. Right? Right? But really, but the snake, he's the most cursed of all. Because he's a multi-multi-millionaire. He doesn't need anything from anyone. What a poor soul he is. Because he'll never know or need God. He'll never think that he has to turn to God. And there's no greater curse than never feeling you have to turn to a power greater than yourself. Because that power greater than yourself is responsible for you having a self at all. And you'd be losing the depth of yourself if you weren't able to reach to the source that's beyond self. So that's the curse. That's the greatest curse in the world. Right? The greatest gift in the world is the opportunity to turn to Hashem. And that's why everything that happens in our life is Hashem's gift. Right? Hashem's gift to try to get us to call. Right? To call. That's all he's trying to do, is get us to call. You know, there's a story about a couple that call their kid. They say, honey, we're sorry, we got to tell you this, but your mother and I are getting divorced. Getting divorced? You've been married for 35 years. Well, yes, I know, but we've had it. We can't deal with it anymore. Don't do anything rash. I'm coming right over. Right? So they hang up. Father says, what? Okay, we got her over for Pesach. Now how are we going to get her to come for Shavuos? How do I get you to come, right? When you start out, you know, like, how do you get, that's the problem. That's the problem. Hashem's just saying, I'm just knocking, I'm just just call me and I'll be there. Right? But you're not calling. So I have to create situations to get you to call. Just pick up the phone. Right? I'll pay for this call. Okay, just pick up the phone. Just push the automatic dial that says Abba. You know, that's all. How long does it take for people to make the call? I don't know. They say in drug abuse that only when people hit rock bottom, only when their knees hit the ground, they start to pray. You know? And that was not God's gift to them? Was that not God's gift to them? I mean, I personally could never say this. I'm not looking to be challenged in this. But I know a fellow who was in a terrible accident and was thereby paralyzed in his entire body. He's an extremely happy man. Extremely happy man. So we asked him, well, why are you so happy? He said, you know, before this accident, I had feet, but I had no idea where I was going. I had hands, but I didn't know what I was doing. And now, I'm going places, and now I'm doing so much with my life. Right? So, what can I say, you know? We shouldn't be challenged with it, but that's the question. How do you make the call? How do you make the call? All right, any more questions on this? No? Yeah.
How do you make the call?
Well, I can tell you the area code is 613. I can tell you. And I can tell you that if you don't make the call, it's collect. If you don't make the call, someone's going to come and collect. So if you make the call, it's free. If you don't make the call, you pay for the calls you don't make. Right? That's the point. When it comes to Hashem, you pay for the calls that you don't make, and the calls that you do make are free. It's on Hashem. Right? Right? So how do you make the call? How do you make the call? Right? You just do. That's what Rav Nachman says over here at 24. Let's look at number 24, mastery and patience, delayed gratification. When asked by a disciple to define free will, Rabbi Nachman replied, "It is very simple. If you wish, you do. If you do not wish, you don't do." That's the problem with this. What's so complicated about our lives is it's so simple. That's what makes it so complicated. This is so, so simple. You know, I remember I decided, you know, I want to get into shape. And, as you get on in years, you realize you better start exercising. And you can't rely on the, you know, there's no spare parts. So I bought myself this bike, this exercise bike called an Airdyne. It's called an Airdyne because it throws air in your face so you dine on air, right? That's why it's called an Airdyne. So it was, you know, very expensive. We did research and we went to the heart center in Shari Tzedek to find out what's the best bike and what would be the best form of exercise. And this is perfect because it exercises your hands and your legs and everything. So put the money out there and I said, I'm going to do it. Now, I could have joined a gym, but I felt, no, I won't go to the gym, right? So if I pay a lot of money, that'll force me, right, to do it. It'll be sitting right there in my bedroom. Okay, so I bought it and got on it and didn't really like it so much and didn't like the taste of the air. And then the next day I didn't do it and the next day I didn't do it. Anyways, it became a clothes rack. I started hanging my clothes on it. And one morning I wake up and I say to my wife, and it's like right there in front of our bed. I say, Chana, this thing's going to give me a heart attack. She says, why is this going to give you a heart attack? I said, every morning I wake up stressed. I keep saying, I got to get rid of this thing because it's stressing me out. Like, I'm never getting on it. Okay, so this was really bothering me. Like, why don't I get on it? And I remember so distinctly, I was coming back from Shachrit, from morning prayer. and I'm thinking about this bike, right? And like, you know, now would probably be a good time to get on it, right? But I don't want to get on it. And I thought to myself, you know, David,